Okay, open a, gotta do that already, public hearing on HJR 46, and invite, you wanna come up together? I've got David Williams and Randall Edwards. Come on up, Mr. Treasurer, why don't you come on up first? OSEA, sorry, I'm just, Okay, welcome back. I think you have some,
Yes.
amendments to talk to us about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Randall Edwards, Treasurer of Oregon, and with me is Chuck Smith, who's, Director of the Debt Management Division of, the State Treasurer's Office. The amendments I'm speaking to are the dash 7 to this HJR, which, are sort of an outgrowth of a subcommittee meeting that was held last Friday, as you recall, Mr. Chair. Let me just recap basically what the resolution is going to do and then briefly what the amendments do. One, the resolution really does two things. One, it gives the state a tool to help finance the Oregon opportunity, which is OHSU's expansion in biomedical research, as is a bill that's outlined in Senate Bill 832. That has yet, as I understand, come to the House, would have the state finance $200 million for this expansion. It would, in essence, as I've testified before, if we could have the HGR resolution to the people in the past using a general obligation bond to finance that, we could see a savings in interest of about $70 million versus if we did not have that tool. Second, the bill would also give the state and basically give you a tool to begin addressing the potential needs of or the need of capital needs of public schools, which I think you've heard testimony here before you a couple of times about this this need around the state. Financially, bonds are the appropriate tool for the state to finance itself to help school capital needs. We've used bonds for capital in the past. That's what's outlined here in the dash 7. And for me, the policy question before you is, first and foremost, is the state, should it have a role in this? And I submit to you that this is a starting point to enter into debate about the state's responsibility on the capital side of schools. The first, and let me put the context and time frame into this, getting this measure before the people and assuming this passes out of the building and gets before the voters and it does pass, you're not looking at a dollar or a dime most likely going out under this until probably the year 2004, if you think about it, because you get this to the voters, the first dime for schools would likely be built into the next budget, assuming that's something you do, in which case, again, you can set the parameters how much you want to go forward using this tool, but really, in all practical purposes, you probably wouldn't see money going out to schools until the year 2004. Now you're talking about a three-year timeline between now or potentially when this would go, in which you would see some assistance to school districts. The measure is a May 2002 vote, so it's a year from now before the voters would get a chance to look at this. The reason for the May vote is that OHSU needs financing the summer of 2002. Putting it before the voters, we would know which way we would go, whether we have a GO bond to sell to help finance their proposal that way, or if not, we have a backup, which is to basically sell tobacco revenue bonds. Again, I want to underscore the difference in cost is about $70 million over a period of 20 years. So that's really what's before you. The dash 7s lower the amount in which the total amount of capacity that could be issued for this program. It's lowered now to 0.5% of real market value versus the original bill, which was 1%. And that, again, is bring some size down in what is the long-term commitment by the state. So that's really, in essence, change, fundamental change. We highlight, again, capital needs. I understand there's a dash 6 amendment that you'll hear, which brings preschool. I think that's, I just learned about it before I came in here. I think that's a good amendment. It'd be pre-K through K, or through 12, which I think would be prudent. As I understand it, there's some Head Start programs that potentially could use the program as well.
Do you want to talk about any of the specific changes that appear in the dash 7s based on, since our last conversation about this?
You want to check?
Mr. Chair, I'm Chuck Smith. For the record, I'm Chuck Smith, the manager of the Debt Management Division. One of the changes would be with respect to the Dash 7 amendments is decreasing the amount constitutionally authorized to 0.5% instead of 1% in the previous measure.
And in today's dollar, that today's value, that cap is worth how much?
About $1.2 billion today's cap level.
Capitalization.
So the other change.
And let me help you out. I think I had requested language on page 2, lines 22 through 24, clarifying that bonds may not be used to finance operating costs.
Right.
Since that language above was capital costs include but are not limited to, I wanted some clarifying language that there is a limitation with respect to operating costs. Okay. Questions, then, of the Treasurer, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chuck, I'm sorry, I missed. What would be the value, the maximum value of the bonds based upon property values that exist today in the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, about $1.2 billion, which would be 0.5% of true cash value.
Okay, and if you could give us some indication, what would be the likely, what are we talking about here, 25, 30-year bonds, probably?
The bonds could be from 20 to 30 years.
And it's 25 or 30 years. What is, if we max this out at $1.2 billion, what is the debt service requirement?
About $100 million a year, tad over $100 million a year.
If they were maxed out?
Yes.
Right. Additional questions?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the previous version of this bill, we saw a matching on a 10 to 40% type formula. What is presumed here in the Dash 7s? I don't see that language in here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, we, if you recall, that was in the implementing law 3370, and we're talking about the HJR, which was always silent about what is embedded in here is some sort of match, but that's a policy. The actual mechanics are not, that's in 3370.
So we'd be punting that decision to the next legislature if it enacted some legislation that would make possible the authority granted, should the voters grant the authority under this referral.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, as you recall from the subcommittee meeting which you attended, that was the decision of the subcommittee, was to proceed with the HJR and then come back next session with the mechanics.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Carlson, down here.
Thank you. In talking about what entails capital costs, we were just having a discussion not that long ago about the problems under Measure 50 where school districts can bond for the buildings, but they can't bond for the desks and the library books and that type of thing. When it says technology and equipment is authorized by the Legislative Assembly, does that equipment then tie only to technology, or would it be a broader set of equipment? Are we limiting ourselves here to with the capital cost piece? And maybe we should, but I just wanted to raise the issue.
As is outlined in, on I think you're on page 2. Line,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on line 15.
15, yeah. The intent there is to give some flexibility to the state to meet some of those needs through their geobond piece. I think the interface of what ballot measure 50 and this would outline some restrictions as to specifically what the locals could issue for. So I think the technology addresses a specific need, and that also in the equipment. My read of this is we're talking a little broader than just technology.
Okay. So the
yes, sure.
So the fact that, because I know they don't put commas in bills before ands, so it makes it kind of difficult to know whether the equipment then ties to the language before it or whether it actually stands on its own. So I just, for the record, your impression is that there is some flexibility in the language of equipment and that's something the legislature could address?
Yes. And again, I think, again, this is yours to define. I read that broader and then decide what you're willing to bond for. I think the chair's point was good language as well, which was to say we're talking about capital, not operational needs. And I think that's a very important line to draw whenever we're talking about bonds particularly, because you don't want to finance operational costs. from the state's perspective and yours, that in the end, that can signal that you're in some financial problem, trouble, because you're now operating on debt, which you don't want to do.
Mr. Chair, just final comment. And my understanding is that right now, currently, there's this bridge between what's considered capital, which is the infrastructure, and then operational, and then the stuff in between, which are textbooks and desks and chairs and that type of thing. And so somehow, from what I understand, school districts are actually purchasing them out of operational funds now when they have to build in the school. So
right.
Makes it tough.
Representative Carlson, if, when we get to work session, if you want to make a conceptual amendment to add a comma after technology, I'd...
They probably wouldn't let me.
Well, I think it's in our hands.
I've talked to legislative council about that already.
thanks, Chair. This way this is done now, the way this is structured now, we aren't obviously obligating any money. The voters have to approve this. I want to make sure that if the voters do approve it, that there isn't language in here that really sends too strong a message that the legislature shall think very strong about. We often, everyone tries to take messages from the voters, and we get pretty holy around here when voters approve something and as a signal that we have to do what they said to do. But of course, they're not saying to do this. I guess I'm partially just looking for a statement on the record from you. If this passes, how are you going to approach the next legislature that wants to retain discretion as to whether to, fund this kind of debt service?
Let me, Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, let me reframe this a little bit. What I see this is a starting point to have a discussion long-term here in the building and with school districts. We don't have a tool to offer some assistance, and how we define that will be defined next session, what you as a legislature want to do. This is just simply asking the voters whether or not the state should have a tool that they could ultimately enter into a discussion with the taxpayers locally about how the state could potentially pay for capital needs. That's how I see this. And the issue of the size, again, this is discretionary. The way you bond, the way the bonding programs work in the state, you have control over how much money you want to put in per bonding program, whether it's for parks or higher ed, you name it. You put it in, and you dictate to the agency what they can go out and bond. We work with the agency and sell that on the marketplace. We have many examples, and Chuck can show you, where we have capacity like this, but we don't use it all. And so the point is, we don't have, the issue before you is we don't have a tool that enter into this debate and discussion with how do we meet the long-term capital needs of our school system. And the state, in this way, would have a tool to do that. That's how I see the read on this.
I guess maybe to follow up on that, the comment I would make is that I'll support this out of committee, but I think everyone on the committee understands, and I hope everyone in the room understands, and I'm sure they do, that it's one thing to give the legislature this tool, the state this tool, but it's another thing to come up with the funds to use it. And I just hope this doesn't become a tool to beat the legislature over the head with in sessions to come, when people are down now insisting on money for capital expenses, when we are doing the best we can to right now to even provide for operational expenses. And so I think this will not be the job. We will not have finished the job, I think, just by passing this out and giving voters the opportunity to say we want debt financing for capital construction. Somebody's got to come in with some resources to make this happen, and I guess the agreement here is that that's going to have to come at some later point.
Okay.
Anything else, Representative Bates?
One last question. Representative Witt asked the questions I wanted to ask primarily, but I also wondered how far this goes as far as really resolving the capital needs of our school system, especially K-12. We've got a huge pent-up demand, and it's the figures are large enough that it's difficult for me to put in my mind of how far this would actually go on a matching basis to resolve some of those problems.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I think I've stated on the record many times that this isn't going to solve everybody's problem, and it can't. Is it a starting point? Yes. Will it be a in the end, will we do some good with this tool? Yes, because I think however we structure it, and again, Representative Witt has some ideas about that, particularly in his area with fast-growing districts. You have certain needs in your area. If we had that sliding scale, I mean, if this on average was 30%, so you just, you know, now you're looking at another potential billion over time by a local match if you go down that route. So that you're looking at long-term some big numbers potentially coming. Again, I want to emphasize this is a long-term partnership that we would be looking at creating a tool to help have that partnership. And financially and fiscally, I'm here to say we've got to do this in a prudent way. And will we meet every school district's needs? No. I mean, there's still the issue of many school districts are just going to have trouble meeting some of their operational needs, and to throw on some capital part of it, they're struggling right now. So they may not have a tax base that might support something that would be a match. And again, I think we got to look at the long term. This is a starting point. It begins us in a direction. You have specific needs in your district. You had a district that just passed a bond. Will that help them since this is potentially going to happen in the future? Unfortunately, no. But you got to start somewhere, and that's what we're trying to do.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. David Wilson, or Williams, is right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is David Williams. I'm here representing the Oregon School Employees Association. OSCA is a union representing classified employees in Oregon's K-12 and education service districts. And in some of our previous testimony, we expressed concern with this piece of legislation. However, I'm here today to tell you in all excited fashion that we think that this is now a fine piece of legislation, and we wholeheartedly support the -7 amendments. You all may be familiar with the increasing capital and facilities maintenance needs that face Oregon's districts around the state, school district buildings in decrepit condition, maintenance being postponed for the most part indefinitely due to increasingly tight budgets. In school districts with high growth, many of you are familiar with the needs facing them for capital construction, districts opening new schools with already at capacity and overcapacity because of delayed implementation of construction for lack of financing. And we think that HGR 46-7 allows school districts to begin to address those needs, and it gives them, restores to them another tool that of the many tools that were taken away from them over the years to address these needs. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mark Nelson, did you want to advance the dash sixes?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Oregon Head Start Association. Very simply, Mr. Chairman, dash six amendments would amend HJR 46 to put the words pre before kindergarten, so that it would be clear that these funds, if used, could be used by local school districts for pre-kindergarten Head Start types of operations. Currently, there are several Head Start programs housed in school districts. This is up to the Head Start program and the local school district. This just gives the option for pre-kindergarten to be included in any kind of a bond capital construction proposal. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Actually, I do have a question, Representative Williams. Greg Chimel, you come on up. We have a may and shall issue here between the dash sixes and dash sevens.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chamoff, I was showing you a copy of the dash sixes, which in subsection 3 state that the proceeds from the bonds issued under this section may be used to, and then it gives A and B.
This is on page 2, line 6.
On page 2, line 6. When I'm looking at the dash sevens, It reads that the proceeds from the bonds issued under this section shall be used to, and I guess I understand shall, which I think is limiting to simply A and B. The may I ask you a little bit about, and I guess now I'm confused that I see they're different in each draft. Is there a difference between the two?
Do we need a bill that says may and shall mean the same thing?
Ooh, that'd be a good one.
I mean, you and I mentioned, just briefly talked about adding potentially the word may only in the dash sixes, but now that I see that it was written differently in the dash sevens, I guess I'm a little confused.
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, we would use the term may as a limited form of authorization, where so if we said you may use the funds for these purposes, and it lists two, those are the two purposes for which you may use the funds. If we say shall, it's a directive, and it would require the use of the funds for those purposes.
So it would be possible, let me just take the argument out a little bit, it would be possible, for example, to bond, if you use the bond funds, you would be under the dash sixes. If you use them, you would have to use them for A and B, but you wouldn't have to use them necessarily and could simply sit on them. Under the dash sevens, if you went out and bonded and got the funds, you would be obligated to use them for A and B.
Mr. Chair, Representative Williams, that's how I would interpret the difference, yes.
Well, that's sort of interesting.
Which do we like?
Well, Mr. Chair, also I noticed that there's an addition in the dash sevens that's not included in the dash sixes about subsection 4 in the dash 7, 22 through 24,
mm-hmm.
That's not in the dash 6s at all. May not be used to finance operating costs.
Oh, that is in the dash.
I didn't see that.
Let's see, wait a second. I'm sorry. If the dash 7s have it and the dash 6s don't?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, should we have somebody from the Treasury come up?
For the record, Kate Richardson, Treasury. And your question is, why is one in the dash sevens? And
actually, let's start with May and Shall. Does the Treasury have a preference?
Our earlier amendments would have said shall. It was inadvertently left out by legislative council and was caught for these. And our original work group within Treasury beforehand wanted to make sure that the funds could not be sat upon. So that was the shall may. We didn't discuss shall may with legislative council, however.
Okay. You prefer the shall in the dash seven?
That of the interested parties in our work group, that was the preferred interpretation.
And okay, yes.
We say sat upon. Are you saying then that somebody could, in essence, ignore the intent of this by saying, well, it doesn't say we have to do this? Is that what you're implying then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hess, there was some concern that that might happen. I don't know how strong of a concern, but may, I think, at least in that work group, was interpreted as being more permissive than
Mr. Chair.
Since under bond law, there are kind of implied limitations on arbitrage and how long you can sit on those bonds anyway, but Representative Williams?
Well, it does raise sort of an interesting question, though. It would be possible for the legislature who had been authorized the bonds to authorize the bonds, but then at some point choose not to potentially, because of some intervening circumstances, go with either one of the two options under the limitation for some particular purpose. We would be obligated under the shall language to do it whether we thought in our best interest, once having stepped out on that limb, it was the best thing to do or not.
Okay. Mark, I want to just make sure the only differences, I shouldn't say that. You have pre-kindergarten on line 9 of page 2, does it appear anywhere else in the dash 6s?
Mr. Chairman.
First page, okay, first page, line 14.
14, yes. And then line 9, correct.
And line 9, okay. I'm just thinking if we need to somehow move these together. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Committee, yeah, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I didn't follow exactly the language that Representative Carlson had pointed out. It was different.
Oh, okay. It's that the dash 7s have the language that I requested on lines 22 through 24 of page 2 that state expressly that proceeds may not be used to finance operating costs. And the dash 6s did not pick up that additional language.
Mm-hmm.
So to do this, we'd have to, my sense, we're not in work session, but I think we could get there if we conceptually amended the dash 7s to add pre on the first page, pre on the second page on line 9, and then pre before kindergarten on line 23. I think that would merge them, but we're still left with the conundrum of shall or may. Representative Williams?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess I would be...
Again, we're not in a work session, right. So let's talk about it.
I would be more inclined, I guess, to the may language rather than the shall language.
Does the anybody else on the committee have a preference about that now?
I prefer may, sure.
You prefer may?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Representative Witt?
Could Representative Williams explain why he prefers may? And if you can tell us exactly where in the dash 7s he's referring to that.
Representative Witt, the may doesn't occur in the dash 7s. It occurs in the dash 6s. And it's on line 6 of page 2. on 6 of page 2 in the dash 7s, it just says, the proceeds from the bonds issued under this section shall be used, and then it puts out the A and B, and under the sixes, it simply says that the proceeds from the bonds issued under this section may be used. And while I don't think there's probably a whole bunch of significance there, I guess I'm more interested in preserving a little bit of legislative flexibility. We wouldn't be able to use the proceeds for any other purpose, but one could potentially sit on the proceeds if for some reason there was a decision made legislatively not to proceed with A or B.
Not to do it at all.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative.
Yeah, it seems to me, Representative, that may, as Mr. Chamoff indicated, becomes permissive, so it's not directive. It's not directing us to use it. It says you may use it should you want to. The language shall, to me, means in using the funds, you shall use it for these things. I don't think it forces you or requires you to use it at any given point in time for these things. It simply says you can't use it for anything but these things.
Well, but I think that's what the may does as well. But I think the may gives the legislature a bit more permissive flexibility as to the issue of timing.
But then, Mr. Chair, Representative, don't you think that it opens up the door, though, to using it for things that are not specifically stipulated here?
No, I don't, and I don't think that was the testimony of legislative counsel.
I guess I didn't hear him thoroughly. Then.
You want to bring him back? I'll bring him back.
Come on. Come on back.
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, if you're using may, that list includes the items for which the funds may be spent. It isn't a direction to spend the money for those items. You could, in Representative Haas's terminology, sit on the money. The shall is a direction to spend the money and spend it for the two purposes listed.
Okay, if I can ask a question then, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I guess two or three questions. Number one, using the word may, does it, in your opinion, Mr. Chamoff, open up the use of the funds to anything other than the things that are specifically stipulated?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, no.
Okay, and second question, in using the word shall, does it require you to spend it on those things in any given time frame?
Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, without having read either the amendments or the bill, I can't answer that question definitively, but in the abstract, no.
Okay. You drafted it.
Mr. Chair, Cindy Hunt, who's just shortly.
Cindy, come on up.
Oh.
Are you in Dexter's office?
He's doing a good job.
Okay. Do you want to answer?
Yeah, if I can, because if that's the case, and I agree with your answer, Mr. Chamoff, using the word shall and then stipulating the things you shall use the funds for doesn't mean that you shall use it within a specific time frame if the bill doesn't stipulate specifically to that time frame. So I don't see how going from shall to may addresses Representative Williams' concern. Because the interpretation you just gave me of shall, which says that you have to use it for these things, but it doesn't say when you use them, doesn't stipulate when you have to use them. I don't think it addresses, I don't think it does anything to mollify Representative Williams' concern, because he wants to keep flexibility as to when you use them.
Cindy, do you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. Chair Shetterly, Representative Witt, that's correct. They don't, the shall and the may does not speak to the time frame of when you're spending the money. And I think, I don't have them in front of me here, but I think elsewhere in the amendments it talks about, in fact, by state statute or something, establishing limits and time frames and that kind of thing.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I think then from the concerns that Representative Williams expressed, I think either word works. So I'll defer to what he prefers because I don't think it makes any difference.
If I may, Mr. Chair, since I was the one who maybe raised this issue and will be quickly retreating from it if he would prefer me to, I guess the question I have then is I'd like you to define for me, if you can, Cindy, the distinction between using may and shall. What difference... If the differences that Representative Witt is just taking you through aren't in fact the difference, then I guess I'd like to know what the difference is between may be used and shall be used, other than the note someone slipped me saying that bond counsel or whoever we deal with wants shall rather than may. And to the extent they do, I'd like to know why the hell they think it makes a difference.
Excuse me, parents.
If it makes a difference for them, I think this committee ought to understand what the difference between may and shall is, because they sort of seem to be big words.
Right. Yeah, I think it's correct that in this context, I don't think it makes a difference. However, the requesters of the amendments did want the change to shall. So since I didn't see it as making a difference, and I think shall's, you know, appropriate as far as legally appropriate, there you go.
Let me take a stab. I know the school board, have you ever done bonds?
We've done bonds.
My understanding, I've done bonds, is that overarching this, you have your law of public finance and bond debt and all that kind of stuff. And there is no bright line rule as to the time within which the bonds are issued and the time within which the proceeds have to be applied to a particular project. But there is just kind of this doctrine of, I think, staleness or something like that that they refer to that says within a certain period of time you must. So I'm not sure that may or shall really makes much difference either here, because I think that, number one, once the bonds are issued, they have to be used for the purpose that they were issued. And under that doctrine, they have to be used within a certain period of time or the authority expires. And I don't think anyone knows exactly when that is.
The other factor here, too, is that, I mean, part of the amendments deal with, for example, OHSU. There's enabling legislation. It's Senate Bill 832 that's over in Ways and Means. That talks about time frames for issuing these bonds. So any reading of this should also be read in conjunction with that other bill. Now that's a work in progress. So the other thing as far as the kindergarten through grade 12 portion of this, if this were to pass, there would also be enabling legislation for that. That would specify constraints and that kind of thing.
Representative Bates?
My limited knowledge of this from being on a school board and doing bonds, was that ours did have limits on time and when we had to use it, but the shall and may type of language was irrelevant as far as time was concerned. It was a direction. One was directive, as Representative Witt has said, the other was not. And reading this, when we're talking about changing the Constitution, and I'm not a constitutional lawyer or lawyer of any kind, but if you put shall into this, then that's going to limit by constitutional amendment what we can use this money for, and that's probably what the bond market's like. They want a limit on that so they know where that money's going to be going, at least in a broad sense. And statutory change would have to fall within that, within those limits. As an example, if OSU wanted money for its first-tier engineering school and decided to use this vehicle for it, they would not be able to if the language said shall, because the way I read this bill, it's pre-kindergarten through 12 and the health sciences center, but nothing else. If it says may, then potentially the state legislature could allow bonds to be issued for that. And that's an example of the way I would read this piece. I'm not sure that's correct, but that's the way I'd read it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bates, I think that's not correct. When we're using the term may, it's an authorization for just the things that follow. So it would be K through 12 plus OHSU, and the money would not be able to be used for items outside that list. The difference between using may and shall in this circumstance is you may decide to use the money for K through 12 and not OHSU. You may decide to use it for OHSU and not K through 12. If it says shall, you're going to use it for both.
Mm-hmm. Run that one by me again.
Mr. Chair.
The last sentence.
Yes.
Because it doesn't say and it doesn't say less.
Yes. If the measure says that the state shall use the funds for purposes A and purposes B,
then it will be used for A and B.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. May gives you a choice of those two.
No, not A or B, but A and B.
Okay. Well, it doesn't say and it doesn't say or.
No. Representative Wood?
Based on that, Mr. Chairman, we shall use shall.
Hmm.
I think. Maybe.
I tell you what, we are only in public hearing right now. What I'd like to do is cogitate on that for a little while, and let me keep this public hearing open, but also now open. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Crowe.
Yeah, I just had one other thing I wanted to point out, and that is the differences between dashes 6 and 7. When Cindy was talking about that, on the bottom of the first page, starts at line 22, bond shall be the direct obligation, be in such a form, run for such a period of time, have such terms, bear such interest rates as may be. You'll notice that the dash 6 is, say, authorized by the state treasurer, and the dash 7 say provided by statute. So that's a difference as well.
Thank you, Proofreader. Let's get a read on that, please.
Stop reading.
Just trying to make sure we know what we were doing.
Okay, Richardson.
That means it doesn't do better because it means that's a statute.
And the reason for that would be, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, to reflect the same sort of language that's already in the Constitution when we issue bonds. The state treasurer has been doing that, but that's been provided by statute. So this gives the legislature a little flexibility, I guess.
Yes.
We can maybe trade it off.
And where's that language?
Top of page 2 in both 6 and 7.
Bottom of page 1 and the top of.
And so the preference is statute or treasurer?
By statute.
Statute. Okay.
That matches other constitutional language already in place.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll keep this hearing open. If conversation drifts, we can accommodate that. But let me go ahead and open a public hearing on SJR 21 and SJR 22 and invite up Senator Courtney.
Yes, please.
And while we're doing that, if someone wants to be comparing word for word the sixes and sevens to make sure there aren't any other.
I didn't.
Okay, good, thanks. All right, you want to give us the overview? Sure.
Chairman Shelley, members of the committee. SGR 21 provides funds for planning and seismic rehabilitation of building zones by the State Board of Higher Education, school districts, education service districts, and community colleges. There'd be a constitutional amendment with a $500 million authorization for general obligation bonds. Debt service and principal repayment would come from general fund appropriations, allocations of undirected lottery or undedicated lottery revenue, and allocations from the Education Endowment Fund. It's tied to Senate Bill 14, which identifies and prioritizes the needed seismic rehabilitations and refers proposed amendment for vote at the next general election.
Okay. Should I go 22? Yes, go ahead. Let's hear that, and then we'll turn it over to Senator Courtney.
SGR 22, pretty similar, provides funds for planning and seismic rehabilitation of emergency services buildings, including public buildings for fire protection services, hospitals with acute inpatient care facilities. Constitutional amendment again, that's a $500 million authorization for general obligation bonds, tied to Senate Bill 15, which identifies and prioritizes needed seismic rehabilitations and refers proposed amendment for vote at next general election.
Okay. Senator Courtney, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter Courtney, State Senator, District 17, which is the Salem-Kaiser area. Before you, as outlined by your Leonard and High Committee Administrator, are two resolutions that would go to people for their vote at the next general election that are tied to two other pieces of legislation which have just recently, in the last 24 hours, moved from your General Government Committee over on this side of the building, two ways and means. There is a third bill that involves drills for earthquake preparedness that moved from that committee directly to the House floor, which does not have a Ways and Means impact and is not impacted by these two resolutions. By way of information, I did not bring with me today the legions of geologists and seismologists and geotechnical engineers that present the case of what it will come into the state one day, and that is a catastrophic earthquake in the magnitude of at least 9 on the Richter scale. And the world experts on this say it will be the probably the worst earthquake to hit this country. There was such a quake that hit Oregon back in 1700. I think it was on January 26th. They actually think it was at 9:30 at night. And you have in law that was created by past legislatures a Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission that I was placed on that has as a mission to come up with ways of reducing the threat of earthquakes to this this state. The state is divided up into several regions, and basically these bills deal with the regions which are west of the Cascades. The SJR 21 speaks specifically to schools because in Senate Bill 14, we require all schools, and by that I mean K through 12, community college and higher ed, to have surveys completed of all their buildings by 2007. After those surveys are completed, according to FEMA 154 standards, and that is geologist talk, geotechnical engineer and seismologist talk, and all my degrees are in the humanities, so I don't know anything about natural science or anything like that. In fact, I don't even know why I'm on this task force, but they put me on there, and I've learned a lot. And they then will be able, after analyzing all those surveys, they will be able to prioritize those buildings as to which ones are most at threat, and not only prioritize them, but actually go inside them and prioritize what's part of the buildings that are most at threat. That's schools. So SJR 21 is connected to all the schools. Once the surveys are done, we have said in Senate Bill 14 that those schools have until 2000, they have 30 years to retrofit those schools depending upon resources available and depending upon the prioritization of this, that's done by the survey. SJR 22 is connected to Senate Bill 15, which involves hospitals and fire stations. And I might add, Mr. Chair, we are going to amend police stations into that bill because when those bills came off the Senate floor, Senator Menace wanted to know why we didn't put police stations in there. We cannot save the world. We concentrated on, and they have until 2007 to have those surveys done, but we've come up with a 20-year figure for hospitals and fire stations and police stations to be retrofitted, feeling that if this thing were to hit sooner, no disrespect intended, the need for fire, police, and hospitals it's got to be there. And one thing we've learned from earthquakes around the world is that those kinds of emergency services are very critical. The beauty of the package we put together, supposedly, and the head of DOGGOMI, if you were here, John Boley, would say this, according to his testimony given before several committees, FEMA is watching this package very closely, as are 10 other states, because no other states attempted to do what we're going to do should these bills come out of the session and should these joint resolutions come out. That is, we know we can't spend billions and billions of dollars to retrofit all the buildings throughout this part of the state. We cannot do that. But we can, through using survey techniques that FEMA has come up with, which we're using, very advanced computer techniques and things, we can survey buildings such that we can select those buildings that we are going to decide we think prioritize-wise we need to fix. We then look at our resources, and we spread those resources about. The beauty of that is every session of the legislature for the next 20 to 30 years will decide how to use those resources. Because let's say you choose to put these ballot measures out, and they pass. That doesn't mean a single bond will be sold. Each session of the legislature, the surveys and information will be brought into this session in the form of reports during the interim as well as before respective committees, as well as in a bill form. Your revenue committees, your ways and means committees, will then, with the schools coming before you, the hospitals, police and fire, will decide how much bonds they want to sell and what process using the Department of Administrative Services, all of which this is going to be explained by Dick Yates much better than me. So this dynamic approach, matching resources with these surveys and prioritization, has FEMA fascinated, as well as at least 10 other states that need to do this. And I can't, and this may sound self-serving to say this, this has nothing to do with Peter Courtney. Being a member of the task force, we put together this package, and at the last minute, we didn't know how we were going to fund it, and we came up with the two SJRs. And as I speak to you, as we work these bills on the Senate side, a coalition of hospitals, schools, higher ed, Oregon Health Science University, League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, FIRE, among others, came together and have played a key role in bringing together this five-part package. So, Mr. Chair, I don't need to go on and on. I can tell you're very busy. You have that revenue game face on. I have never served on a revenue committee. Don't want to serve on a revenue committee because I would be a disaster. And I have to say, I'm very much intimidated by you and this committee. I was saying to Mr. Yates, I said, you know, this is a heavyweight committee. I mean, they got guns on this committee. I mean, there are big guns sitting on this committee. In fact, I'm not sure there's any committee I've gone before. I've gone before committees that have big guns, but not with this many on it at one time, if you know what I'm saying to you. So I'm not going to allow you, please don't ask me too difficult a question on revenue. I'm not a revenue man. I just told you that. You know that. I'm a humanitarian. My degrees are in the humanities. They're not in natural sciences, and they're nothing to do with finance or budgets. You understand that? But I got a pretty good tummy to know what a 9 earthquake will do to Oregon if it were to hit today. It would tear us to pieces. I got a pretty good tummy that this package isn't bad, and I got a pretty good tummy that, well, I'm no fool, because you see, I made sure these joint resolutions didn't go to the Senate Revenue Committee. They came here. So, you see, and so I made sure of that. And I can say that now that they're out of the Senate. So I did that. And they came out of the committee, that stress committee called General Government and Transportation. You know what happened to that committee. In fact, right after they set this package out, that's when a certain senator misbehaved. But, so you were the first revenue committee, Mr. Chair, committee room. And I know you're not called a revenue committee anymore. You're called something that I don't, some esoteric name, but you, to me, you're the revenue committee that has to deal with SJR 21 and 22. And I thank you for allowing me to present these to you today. And as I say, I could bring in all kinds of legions of experts to talk about earthquakes if you don't believe we're going to get hit with one, if you want that kind of testimony. I can bring them all in here, and I can bring the coalition in here on how these bills came to pass, and I can bring in people in here for dates. But in deference to the committee's workload, I await your command.
Mr. Chairman.
I just want to take this in.
Mr. Chair, we move for the earthquake.
Can we move for the earthquake? Okay, any questions for Senator Courtney or his tummy?
Are we having a moment here?
We're having a moment.
Representative Williams, did you have a question?
I did not.
You did not?
No. No, no.
Are you sure?
I am positive.
Let me give you a second.
No, I okay. I have the greatest respect from the senator, for the senator from Salem.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beck.
I do have a substantive question.
Oh.
Senator, why would these not be combined into one measure? I sent two measures out. Can we combine them?
I want to give, it's my experience in dealing with the Oregon public that they like choices. They like to vote not on general things, but on specifics. We have, the bills are designed on hospitals and fire. We're going to add police in there. The others are on schools. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different types of buildings. Provide all kinds of different services and programs. We can only do so much. And so it is our collective wisdom that we should allow them choices. They may choose to go on both, but rather than combine it all together and get that feeling, well, you know, I do it for this, but not this, the feeling was lay it out there in more dedicated and specific ways rather than to put it all together. So that's why we did it.
Can I?
Yes, you sure can.
Offer another question or comment that you can respond to. I guess my concern is with the way the initiatives process is now, people are putting how many initiatives on the ballot these days, you know, in excess of 15, 20, that I would worry that by us sending to, I don't know how many we're going to send out this session, we seem to be more disciplined this session, which is good, but I worry that by having two of these measures, they kind of get lost in the shuffle, whereas one may have more power that allows voters to accomplish all these worthy or provide financial support for rehabilitating all these types of projects. So why not just combine them? Why do you think people are going to be that scrutinizing over emergency services buildings versus public education buildings? Why would people want one and not the other? Are you worried that they'll get lost in the shuffle, having two?
They may not want $1 billion. They may not want to authorize the sale of $1 billion. These are both $500 million apiece. And they may say, you know what? There's other bond measures. What? Randall Edwards is just here, our state treasurer, saying he wanted certain amounts. And they may decide, I was willing to spend $500 million, but I'm not willing to spend $1 billion. So that's also a factor in this, Chair Shetterly, Representative Beck. I mean, I'm dealing as straight up and as honestly with the public as I can on the threat and on the buildings and on the funding. And that it was my view, and I can be, and I may be wrong. You may combine them, you know, and you may not even send them out. I'm not saying I'm right. I thought by dividing them up this way, the hospitals and the fire and the police in the schools, separating them out, tying them this way, the public can look and they can say, it's a close one. We can only do so much. I'll go yes here, no here, or I'll go yes, yes, or no. So that was the thinking. I'm not trying to play games. I'm not trying to screw around with the, you know, trying to be clever or cutesy. I haven't done any polls. I'm not certified smart. I'm not a psychiatrist. I wanted to lay it out for them and take my chances. Take our team. So that's why. But, you know, if you think not the way to go, or it's a better way to go, you know,
Mr. Chairman,
just one person.
Follow-up question. Mm-hmm. What if we were to combine them but keep the limit at 500 million? I mean, what would be the problems with that or combine them, obviously, and have a $1 billion limit? The legislature still has to authorize the expenditure of this money. This doesn't...
Mr. Chair.
The bond.
Representative Beck. When we start, if I brought in the literature, the first statements by the Department of Geology were, I don't know how many billions of dollars it would take to retrofit. Then we came in with the idea that if we surveyed them and started to prioritize, we got the cost dramatically down. I mean that sincerely, because then you've got to make tough choices, because we can't do it all. You can't spend the billions that you really need to spend. You can't. But we're going to be forced, legislature and others and their communities are going to be forced to decide, this building we will, this building won't. This building will only do this part of it. That's where the beauty of the surveys come in. It's why FEMA is so fast and other states is, you can't spend the billions you really should when you're going to get hurt with an earthquake like this. $500 million is a conservative figure that you need for hospitals, believe me, fire and police stations. By the way, we're going to add fire police stations, and we're not going to increase the $500 million. We're going to eat it. We're going to live with that, including with the surveys. The $500 million, when you talk grades K through 18, is a pretty conservative figure. So you can't just put them together and say we're only going to be $500 million, because that, to me, is... You need the other $500 million, I think. I'm being upfront with you.
No, just trying to... If we did,
you put a billion there, I don't know. You know, I'd like to get at least a victory here. And John, and believe it or not, a guy named McIntyre, an AOI function, said to me he'd even support this. Of course, he would, because he told me his house was right on the fault. But the fact is that at least that encouraged me, because, you know, he destroyed my prepaid tuition program here a few years ago, which I wanted. So I'm struggling here to justify why we did what we did, Representative Beck. I don't think it's completely crazy why we did this, but I don't know whether you're speaking for all the committee or not. If the committee thinks, Peter, you're wrong, we want to throw everything together, then kitchen sink the thing. Kitchen sink it. You know what that means, Representative Beck? You throw it, you want me to take you through that phrase? So, you know, I'm...
Call the chair. No, he does not. You're talking about we're going to add police. Do we have some amendments?
I have to say that I didn't think you'd just jump on this because
we don't have anything in front of
you. You do not. You have amendments. We have amendments, by the way. We have. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there are the A4 amendments for SJR 22, and they are the A4 amendments for SJR 21 because the League of Oregon Cities was concerned about ad valorem. So that is reflected there, but the police amendment would require that also is going to require an amendment because that was just done very recently. So the answer is yes, Representative Shuttleworth.
Something further coming on.
That's
on
correct.
22 anyway. Dick, do you want to talk about the A4s, the ad valorem in out? And while you're doing that, Harrison, why don't you come on up and we'll talk about MUST. We have a new
question.
Here, just at Senator Courtney's request here, not as your...
Right, it's my fault he's here.
That's right. What we did with the two sets of amendments there for 22 and 21 is essentially pattern them after the proposal was also before you still, that is JR 46. So the language is similar, and what it does, the main change from the existing law is that where the initial bills or the A and gross bills say that the funding of the debt service may be through a property tax, and this explicitly forbids the use of the property tax.
Okay, so out of the ad valorem on both 21 and 22.
Right. Correct. Other than that, they're very similar. Again, the difference being the use of the funds.
Okay. Does must mean the same as may and the same as shall?
Harrison Conley, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I happened to tune the dial and I caught part of that discussion. I didn't catch the whole discussion. Frankly, I'm not quite sure, as I'm looking back at the draft and where I see a may in the draft, it sounds like the issues with Cindy Hunt's bill may be different. I think I only have one object following May, so that's in line.
Which one are you looking at here?
I'm looking at SJR 21A4. Let's start with. I modeled the 21A4 and the SJR 22A4 after HJR 46-7. So it is substantially identical to that one, with the exception of the fact that I used must generally where shall was included in that one. I did so because there's a long history, I think, in most states, the term shall is used as a command. When I say person shall do something, that's clearly understood to be a command. When we have a passive voice sentence, like the one that starts on line 17, any indebtedness must be in the form of a general obligation bond. I would not use shall in that case because shall be states a future tense state of being. It shall be something, but what is it now? It's essentially, so I said must be. It must be at all times. Generally speaking, statutes are intended to speak in the present tense and speak continuously. So that would have been my objection to using shall there, is that it was a future tense state of being when used with a passive voice subject. So,
well, since we're not going to move these today, I guess we can. That's fine. I just wanted to get that on the record since you had sent me the note and confused me by it. Representative Bates, I think you had.
I think Representative Witt wants to call this, but I want to ask questions.
Okay. Representative Witt.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple questions for Senator Courtney. The cost, Senator, on this, if both of these measures went out and were approved and various entities, schools, hospitals, fire districts, so forth, come to the legislature, present these needs, susceptibility to earthquake, the total cost would be $1 billion, the total bonds would be $1 billion, as I understand it. Would that be about $160 to $180 million per biennium in terms of general funds to support those obligations? Is that about what you anticipated?
Mr. Chair, Chair Shirley, Representative Witt, can I defer to Mr. Yates to respond to that question.
Chair, Representative Witt, basically I used a model which would say a 20-year bond term using a rate of interest of 4.81, which is the advantage of going to general obligation bonding is the lower rate of interest that's available. I used the cost of funding of 1.5% of the value of the bonds. So we're talking then of a net proceeds of $500 million, $500 million, and the annual cost would be $40 million. So if you put the two together, you're at $80 million.
So,
yes,
$80 million per year.
Yes.
So about $160 million per biennium.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Courtney, do you have any concerns that these measures going to the ballot create a certain competition with other measures and may lead to voter concern that I'm going to vote no on all of these measures? Because here is the legislature asking for all this bonding authority, which ultimately leads to pressure for new additional taxes.
Chair Shirley, Representative Witt. Yes, I don't know what other measures that we will put on the ballot. I don't know how many. I've heard a reference by Representative Beck that there are tons going. I'm concerned, especially if those other measures are, and I'm sure they're very worthwhile too. All I can say is that I'm on a task force. I have been convinced by overwhelming evidence of what is coming to our state. This is a minimal response, if I may use that word, even though you've used these incredible figures.
to try to get ready in the areas where we're going to desperately try to keep our kids alive and make sure that those emergency services are available. The polls show, a lot of people I've talked to, that in this area the public seems to be very receptive and will seriously look at this and consider this. I'd like to think that they're not going to trade this for some other measure out there that's also good. Well, I said yes to seismic for hospitals. I'll say no to this. I'd like to think that while the public's very discerning, they won't trade off. But I'm concerned. I worry about that. And I do think, Representative Witt, even though you asked a very pointed question about the $500 million and then the other $500 million, I want to point out some things to you. Even though this would authorize the sale, Representative Witt, and you're a highly intelligent person, we may never...
Too smart to fall for that.
No, but I think you like hearing it. I believe I said that.
Great.
I should have said that. I meant it, but it took me a long time. But anyway, that, for example, we know that hospitals, for the most part, are remodeling themselves every 7 years. Right here, Representative Carlson knows that, like the one here. What I'm saying is, every session may decide we're only going to allow this amount to be sold, and I'm not sure we may never need this totally number of dollars, because on their own, you take Corvallis. Corvallis is ahead of every other part of the state when it comes to doing surveys for the earthquake threat. They're already out there. I mean that. And they're already in their bond measures they're putting out, they're already allowing for retrofit money. I'm just telling you that. So we may never need this money. But I have to admit, yeah, I'm worried about the threat of competition, but I've answered as best I could, Representative Witt. I don't know what else to say. Should I not put these forward because they may threaten? I mean, I don't know what else to do. I got to do something. But wouldn't you agree, if you were on this task force, I would bet you would have put this package together all by yourself. And so I don't know how else to approach this thing. The best I can do, Representative Witt. Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Senator Courtney, with all due respect, I met you the first time a few months ago. When I first heard about a bill coming out about seismic events and you were involved, I thought the bill was about you. Okay. Having said that, did the task force have an opportunity to discover if new buildings for schools and hospitals and police stations and fire stations, are the requirements statewide now they'd be built to a level of a 9 on the Richter scale to withstand a 9 Richter scale earthquake? Do we have uniform codes across states to require that? Do you know?
Chair Shirley, Representative Bates, yes. Those standards have been in effect since at least the early 90s, both in the private sector and the public sector, that supposedly when you build hospitals today or repair them or schools or anything, that there is a seismic factor involved. As I say, I am not a seismologist or a consulting engineer or a geotechnical engineer. Like I'm getting good with the references to who they are, and I can't describe. All I know is it's a FEMA 134 followed by a FEMA 310. I can throw around, but don't ask me what I meant by that. Those are surveys. But the answer is yes to your question.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yes.
When we, in our school district, about 2 years ago, when the building code person came around, he evaluated some of our buildings for earthquake. And I'm not sure he went to that level of 9, but we did receive a report that we were at risk in several buildings. And, of course, the new bonds we put out will answer those questions. So I would support you in thinking that you may not need all of this to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
The survey will tell you that potentially and allow you to have a better handle on this thing.
Thank you. And Chair Shirley, Representative Bates, I'm glad Representative Bates asked me a question. The reason I'm pausing is for effect.
Yes.
And Representative Bates comes from Ashland, the home of Shakespeare. Shakespeare lived there, was raised there, school there. Everybody thinks it's a Portland issue. Let me tell you. I said, everything west of the Cascades has got a real problem with this thing. So I'm real pleased that he asked that question. And on the coast, for your information, if you go to Walport,
even though Representative Beck is not listening to me. If you go to Walport, Wakanda Beach Road, and you will run, do a jog up that road, as some person has done many times early in the morning, you will see up on the hill brand new middle school and elementary school. And you'll go and look at their present high school and the old elementary school, which are right down there in the flats. They got a tsunami coming their way as a result of this that will be unbelievable. So the coast has got another whole issue in this. They got to deal with the tsunami, which is also part of the survey. Trust me, they got to deal with the tsunami. They're only 60 feet high and go 400 miles an hour in the open sea. They go faster than a jet airplane, the power of those things. And when they come on shore, you don't want to be on shore. You want to be up in the hills. So I also want to make sure that while we're talking Portland in the valley, and we're talking the west of Cascades, we're also talking about the Oregon coast as well in terms of these surveys and the incredible approach that we're trying to use to get this state ready.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson, first and then back.
Thank you. My question is for Mr. Yates, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, but it seems like we were talked about $500 million on each of them as an amount, and I might have missed, because I was reading through the amendments on the prior bill when you started the presentation, so I missed part of it. But has there been any estimate in terms of what it might cost statewide? I mean, is $500 million even close to, is it a drop in the bucket? Is it, you know, and then my second part is we would need enabling legislation if these were to pass. There would need to be some sort of a process to figure out all the competing demands that would come in from all over the state about whose hospital would get first, second, third. How does that work?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the way that this is conceived is that basically there's three parts to it. One, there's information in terms of the surveys and then finding out what it is out there that needs to be done. And then there's getting the authority to do that through bonding. And then there's the middle piece. And the judgment was that we're best served if we put that middle piece together after we understand what it is we need to do. And so that would be done by a subsequent legislature. Okay. Now, conceptually, just as you're thinking through the project, my leaning is toward DAS as an administrating agency, because nobody else really has the experience to deal with $500 million of bonding, or $1 billion. Mm-hmm. And they know the arbitrage rules, they know how to handle dealing with that kind of funding. And they also have programs that they've worked which are similar in terms of grants to local government. So once you find out what it is you've got to do, then we can, you know, the state is not going to pay for everything. You're going to go through and you're going to rehabilitate a building. Okay, well, part of that is required by seismic standards, but as long as you're in there and doing it, you might want to do something else. You're going to have a way to judge what the state's responsibility is. And so that would all have to be put together by subsequent legislature.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Gretton Cairns and David Williams. I'm sorry, Representative Beck.
No, I was just going to correct Senator Courtney on
the airplanes
statement he made. I was talking to Representative Williams when he was saying I was listening to him. I was actually correcting statement he made about the west side of the Cascades. My understanding is that the Klamath Falls area east of the Cascade Mountains is one of the more vulnerable places to earthquakes. So I was just making that correction to Representative Williams when Senator Courtney chastised me for it.
Hey, he's too smart for that, too.
I'm ducking, sir.
Well, Gretton, I want to know if you've seen Representative Leonard's amendments.
I'm sure I love them, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Gretton Cairns, Director of Government Relations of the Oregon University System, here in very, very strong support of SJR 21. We supported the package in the Senate and worked with Senator Courtney and his work group in perfecting Senate bills 14 and 15 on these, their companion measures 21 and 22. Let me just back up a little bit. The reason that we know that the Force 9 earthquake occurred in January of 1700 is that the Japanese dated from the tsunami which hit there, devastated the coastal area of the islands and killed thousands of people. We're talking about a subduction zone earthquake, so that we're not talking about the subsurface or the deep earth or the fault, but rather the subduction zone where the Juan de Fuca plate goes under the North American plate. They've been stuck together effectively since January of 1700, and the geologists give us a 300 to 400 or 500, depending on which geology you talk to, for a cycle. So we're in year 301 of the 300 or 400 or 500 year cycle. That's why these bills are in front of you. Oregon did not know it had this exposure until some scientists at Oregon State University doing work on the coast found the evidence of the subduction zone where the coastal plate was moved so far up, and found evidence of sea life at 70 and 80 feet above the mean waterline. They then did further studies and discovered that indeed we had that exposure. So the kind of quake we're looking at is one which is cataclysmic in nature. So I need to make sure that we all understand we're talking about something which is of a magnitude that we've never seen before on the coast and have no, in Oregon, and have no written history of, but it is a demonstrated risk. That is why in the coastal areas of Oregon, as a result of that, this legislature designated what's known as a tsunami zone on the coast, and why construction is happening now above the level of that on the coast, and the school building that Senator Courtney referenced and other new public buildings have to take that into consideration. This measure here would begin the process of making rehabilitation of public education buildings and 22, the other buildings, on a priority basis of the worst cases first, based on an analysis done under FEMA standards. The system and the other members of the coalition will be testifying in front of the Ways and Means Committee and urging that the small but significant appropriation necessary to effectuate the studies be appropriated and we can go forward. For the university system, our back of the envelope estimate is we own more than half of all the structures owned by the state of Oregon. So of all the real property structures you own, the university system is responsible for more than 50%, and the retrofit need is somewhere in the order of $70 million or above. And we would use these funds as they became available over the 30-year life of the program in conjunction with any other rehabilitation that we would do. So we take it as the highest life safety issue which we face. And in the last 10 years, as the knowledge and the understanding of what the threat is has seeped in and settled in, we've now seen action by this task force to come forward with a beginning response. And we endorse it wholeheartedly and urge its approval.
Thank you. Questions for Grant? And I do have one. The state already has bonding authority to some extent with regard to higher ed.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. For new construction and for deferred maintenance, modernization, and code work.
Okay.
And these funds would be joined with them.
Okay.
So that when we did a 154 survey of a building, we said it was $3 million in retrofit. When we went to do it, the code work and other fire and life safety would be coming out of our own funds.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
I'm just curious. I'm looking at the desk for amendments, page 2, line 6, where it defines a public education building as a building owned by the State Board of Education, a school district, an education service district, a community college district, or a community college service district. How does that include higher education?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the dash 4s, so I don't see them.
Jim Green.
And
curious.
Cut out.
Do you still like this, Brad?
We appreciate the lesson on the seduction thing.
Yeah. Public education means a building owned by the State Board of Education, et cetera. There is another section which addresses the State Board of Higher Education. It's my understanding, in the original printed bill, it said, as used in the section, public education building means a building owned by the State Board of Higher Education.
I wonder if that was addressed.
A school district, an education service district, community college service district.
So you'd want that back in?
Yeah, I'd... Yes, I do want that back in.
Okay.
And I do have the A4s, and I'd be...
Yeah, okay, well, we've got some amending on these anyway, so thank you. Good reading, everybody. Julian, do you want to say anything more than you like this one, too?
Just to, again, say that we like this bill.
Thank you.
We like that it's specifically... I won't...
Okay, no, go ahead.
Just that we feel that it is about time the state specifically identifies this specific need for the school district and the enormity that exists, as Stratton so appropriately pointed out. We support the bill.
Okay. With that, then, I'm going to close the public hearing on SJR 21, SJR 22, and HJR 64. And I will announce that we will carry over 3619, 3127, and 64 to Friday. But let's conclude today's, I've got a meeting with the co-chairs that I'm late for already. Let's conclude today's with a work session on HJR 46. Committee, we can look at the dash sevens.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Carlson?
Would you be open to a motion?
Rule suspension first?
Okay. I move that we ask for unanimous consent to suspend the rules for the purpose of conceptually amending HJR 46-7.
Representative Carlson requests unanimous consent that we suspend the rules to allow conceptual amendment to the dash 7 amendments to HJR 46. Is there any objection? We're in rule suspension. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I would move that HJR 46-7 be conceptually amended to change the word kindergarten to pre-kindergarten on line 14 of page 1, on page 2, line 9, and on page 2, line 23.
Okay. Representative Carlson moves that the dash 7 amendments be conceptually amended by changing the word kindergarten to pre-kindergarten on page 1, line 14, the same change on page 2, line 9, and the same change on page 2, line 23. Is there any discussion on that amendment? My sense is that the dash 7s are superior in drafting to the dash 6s, and this moves the only substantive difference between them to the dash 7s. Any objection? Okay. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash 7 amendments to HJR 46 as conceptually amended.
Representative Carlson moves the dash 7 amendments to HJR 46 as conceptually amended. Is there discussion about that? That carries the word shall. Are we happy with that, Representative Beck?
Oh, I guess we had this discussion. I guess I'd be curious to have the weather bonding person thought. I guess I'd be curious to hear why the Treasurer's Office asked for that change.
That's fine. Ken, do you want to come up and answer that?
If it truly doesn't matter, why did someone note it and ask for it to change?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, Ken Armstrong, representing Seattle Northwest Security, is doing municipal bond underwriting. The general feeling was that when the bill was being drafted, we felt pretty strongly that that the state, if it was going to be offering assistance in this area, it needed to meet locally generated bond issues to help pay for capital construction schools. The original language, as I recall, said May, and we had urged the Treasurer's Office and others to have it be mandatory, that you require schools to do a local bond issue if they're going to get state assistance here. So all the drafts subsequent to that meeting said shall. The dash sixes said may, and we got somewhat concerned about that. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I certainly can't comment on some of the discussions that took place today about may versus shall, but we felt that shall was the direction we wanted to go to make sure that the state did bring, that the locals brought their share to the table as well.
Well, I guess, Ken, maybe if I could put it this way, apart from what we could do as grammarians to this and parse may and shall, is your testimony that in that shadowy world of underwriters and bond counsel and the people that deal in the area, that shall is preferred if they're looking at these things?
Mr. Chair, I would certainly agree with that. That's a good summary of it. The stronger the language, the less concerned the financial markets tend to be.
And I assume the less concerned,
the better the rate.
To get on rates.
Okay. Absolutely.
And if I may, Kate Richardson, Oregon State Treasury. Mr. Chair, just one other additional concern, since this was going out to the voters, to the lay reader of this, if they do read all the way through, shall is a stronger word, and they may not understand the legal interpretation of that. It may sound more permissive to the voter as well.
Okay. Any further discussion on the dash sevens? You just want to stand up and say that you want to help fund spinal cord injury research. That's what it is.
We like
shall fund spinal cord injury research. Okay, good. Okay, the motion before us then is to move the dash 7 amendments as conceptually amended to HJR 46. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? Okay. Representative Carlson, you're on a roll.
Okay, Mr. Chair. I would move HJR 46 as amended and conceptually amended to the floor. With a due pass recommendation.
Representative Carlson moves HJR 46 as amended, including the conceptual amendments, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion on the bill, on the resolution? Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I shall vote for this bill today, but I may need some additional information about the may shall issue.
Okay. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support this, even though I do have some concerns relative to how downstream in future sessions, depending on how active we are in using this, it could have some significant impact relative to operating funds, general fund support for education. But, of course, that will be in those future legislatures' control. I do think, though, we're kind of indicating an additional obligation or direction here for the state to be a partner with local districts relative to school construction costs. That's a pretty significant decision. I mean, we've all, those of us who've been in the legislature now for at least, my second session, we've heard a lot of criticism of the legislature and the state in general in terms of not supporting schools enough, and now we're launching off into a new direction that's going to use tax revenues to come into the state, and we're saying now we're going to try to support construction needs as well as operating needs. Now, that does cause me some significant concern. But I think when you look at this as a whole, and particularly you look at the OHSU piece in here, I think there's some benefit here, and there is a real need relative to construction needs in many districts, districts in Washington County being good examples of that. So I'm willing to trust the voters and then trust future legislatures to use this power judiciously so that we don't undermine the needs to provide sufficient funds relative to operations, and let the voters make a decision to see if they want to grant us additional authority.
Representative Hess.
I thank you. I don't disagree with anything that Representative Witt said, but I do think the school districts are looking to the state to do more, even when it comes to capital construction. And to me, this is a way to do that, and I think there's some common sense here in that these bonds will save taxpayers money because of as opposed to the revenue bonds that are often used now. So, I think there's just some basic common sense here in that.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bates.
I'll be supporting this too, and for many of the reasons that have been stated. Two other issues for me is that the fast-growing districts need help in getting those schools built, and historically the fast-growing districts have paid a disproportionate amount of money into the general school fund because of higher wages earned usually in those areas, and this is a way of at least leveling that field a bit. Secondly, I have always believed that no matter where a child is born in the state of Oregon, they need parity as far as schools are concerned, not only operating parity as far as operating funds are concerned, but capital funds also. There are many districts that just don't happen to have a large tax base because of lack of industry or other low-income housing in their areas, and they need this help. So bill allows that to happen, and I appreciate that. So I'll be supporting for those reasons also.
Okay, anything else? I'll just echo the comments that I think have been made. My concern about this, I think you've heard, has been the suggesting to the voters that there is an avenue for funding here, when in fact there is no avenue for funding here. This is an avenue for incurring debt, but it doesn't carry any funding with it. And I hope that the proponents of this and those who have been in to support it will be responsible in how they approach the legislature in years to come, that until we have additional resources or until we're somehow able to marshal the resources in a different order, it's going to be difficult to make any serious advances toward the bond match. But, you know, if the voters want us to do that, this is a way to say that that they want that, and then maybe the next step is to ask them, oh, and by the way, how should we pay for that? Okay? With that, then, let's call the roll.
Representative Fay.
Aye.
Bass.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Papp.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Riff.
Aye.
Vice Chair Scroton.
Aye.
Thorne.
Excused.
Chair Severly.
Aye. House Bill 46 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I had spoken with Representative Hass about carrying that. Are you willing? Okay. Anything else before I close the work session? 46. We will pick up the other bills on Friday. Thank you, everybody. We're adjourned.